Hello, this is Jamie with Stillmire Games, and today my girlfriend Megan is joining us for a little bit of our live cast. Hi, Megan.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello,
Megan has obviously done video conferencing and things like that before, but I think this might be your first live cast. Is that
Yes,
right?
my first ever.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm used to answering questions in kind of a live stream style mode, but Megan definitely is not. And so a few weeks ago, I asked people during one of these live casts to ask Megan questions. And we wrote those down, and Megan has some notes. She's thought about these questions, and she is going to answer them for you today. So these are questions that you asked, just not today. You ready to do this?
Yeah.
All right. I will be also paying attention to any additional things that you say in the comments, and I might throw some of those questions at Megan. I just don't want to catch her off guard. So let's start out with one of your questions was, what is Megan's job? What do you do for a living, Megan?
Yeah, so I am a demand planner. So basically, I just use statistics to help predict the needs of my company's products.
That's what Megan does every day. Yeah. She
Yeah.
works, I work in this office here, and she works from home as well, just right over there. Someone else asked about St. Louis. So we live in St. Louis. What is your favorite food in St. Louis? So if someone's coming to St. Louis, what food would you really want them to try?
So I've got a couple of favorites. Sultan has a veggie saffron curry that I am really obsessed with, so we go there a lot. There's also a place called Endo. They do small plates that are really good, and I enjoy a lot of them, but my favorites are they have this pumpkin dish that's amazing, and I really enjoy their cauliflower. So those are some of my favorites. As far as sweets go, I know everyone knows Jamie has a sweet tooth. I also have a sweet tooth. So the cup is another one of my favorites for cupcakes. Really good. They do really different flavors monthly, and it's amazing. But also, we've been going to the farmers market now that it's been reopened and it's safer to go now. And there's this place that gives baklava, and so I am also obsessed with that baklava right now. I eat it pretty much every
Yeah.
day. They do different nuts and change it up, so it's a very good experience. Yeah.
Those are some great picks. Those are Sultan, Indo. Indo is more of a fancy place. We do that for special occasions.
Small plates, yeah.
Small plates, yeah. The cup, and the farmer's market. Love those recommendations. Yeah. That segues a little bit into a question we'll get into a bit because what she just mentioned are all. Well, actually, no. Indo is not completely vegetarian, but we'll talk about being vegetarian in a little bit because both of us mostly eat vegetarian. So the next question that someone had is. What is something, and I like this question, what is something that you like about me that no one else knows that maybe I haven't talked about all that much or
Right, yeah. So,
at all?
I thought about this, and Jamie is super sweet, and it's one thing I love about him, and he sometimes cries during movies and shows, and I think that's adorable. So, that is one thing I like that I think many people don't
Yeah.
know.
Yeah, it's typically during, like, not during sad scenes necessarily, but like happy scenes where like someone really comes through for a friend or like slow clap scenes in movies get me, like where the crowd starts cheering for somebody for doing something amazing. That I mean that always gets me every time. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. Someone just recognized my Dune shirt in the comments here.
Nice sandworm,
Nice and
yeah.
yeah.
Spice worm, sorry.
Yeah. Megan read Dune when she was a kid. I'm new to it.
Yeah, back in high school, I think, is when it came out ish.
Yeah, a long time ago. All right, so we're continuing with questions that people asked Megan a few weeks ago, and Megan, my girlfriend Megan, is here to answer those questions today. So for those of you just joining us, let's see. Well, okay, someone asked, what is something that Jamie is not good at that Megan is good at, and vice versa? What's something that Jamie is good at that Megan is not so great at. So what do you think about this one?
So I am definitely more detail oriented than Jamie is. So I have found that I am better at assembling furniture and hanging pictures.
So like precise measurements. I'm a duct tape kind of guy
yeah,
at
just
home. I'll throw it up on the wall and fix it later if I
yeah.
need to. And Megan is very precise. She just hung some pictures on our wall the other day, and really nice layout. Yeah.
But something that he is better at than I am is he's definitely more decisive than I am. So when we're trying to make decisions, it's a little snappier when he chooses. He also can give himself a haircut like he did today. I cannot, and I can't really even cut his hair. And also, I would say he's better at doing live casts than I am.
I told her that we didn't actually know if that's going to be true until she actually tried it. I think you're doing a great job then.
Oh, thank
Yeah.
you.
We have a nice comment here about Chris mentioned the work that I've been doing with libraries. Thank you for saying that, Chris. Just a new endeavor for some of our games, and yeah, that's going well so far. I might come back to that topic a little bit later, but while Megan is here with us, she won't be here for the entire live cast. We have a few other questions that people asked Megan that she's here to answer. Oh, here's the vegetarian question. How did you convert me to become a vegetarian?
I love this question because I'm not sure converting is the word I would use, but I did encourage. And especially at the beginning of our relationship, I'm pretty eco and health conscientious. So one of the things that we talked about early on was like cow's milk and beef, which Jamie had still been drinking straight. I'm still unsure about the straight milk drinking, but he would drink a glass of milk every night, and did eat meat. So yeah, and talking through that, it was nice because he listened and ended up taking advice. And even though I'm an almond milk drinker, he is an oat milk drinker. So he did turn to a alternative milk source, and then of course he started to eat less meat at the beginning, and then I don't know, like a year, maybe a little over a year ago, my mom, who also is very health and eco conscientious, came across this documentary called Game Changers,
It's on Netflix.
which is a really good one. So if you're interested in any of that kind of stuff, diet wise, and wondering if you want to go vegetarian. It was very good on showing kind of the health benefits of it. And for some reason that flipped a switch in Jamie and he decided to go almost pure vegetarian. And we'll say we do cheat sometimes with seafood. I love my crab, which is hard to give up. So we're mostly vegetarian, but occasionally pescatarian. And I also did want to mention, I don't know if Jamie has mentioned it before, but the seafood burgers. I don't know if anyone's heard of
Oh,
that. Or
kelp
kelp
burgers.
burgers,
Yeah,
yeah,
no
sorry.
seafood ads.
Sorry, completely vegetarian. is something we saw that is like completely sustainable and completely vegetarian. And I had never heard of this before, but especially if you're by a coast, might be something you want to check out. I don't know. They're good. They just taste like re regular almost like a bean, like the black bean patties. A little salty. I like that. So,
They're from a brand called Akua, AKUA, Akua Kelp Burgers, and they're very tasty.
yeah. I enjoy those. We still have
We
some.
do.
We
Yeah, we have
need
four more to eat.
to have. Yeah.
That's a great answer. And I'll add that Megan mentioned this Game Changers documentary. One of the big things there is that I had thought, okay, I'll just eat less meat and more veggies. But Game Changers kind of pointed out that there's actually a pretty big difference in terms of the health benefits of going vegetarianism. I don't want to push this on any of you. This is a personal choice for me and Megan. But there's a pretty big health benefit in going completely vegetarian and eating very little meat. And that's why we do cheat on seafood a little bit. But usually in special occasions, maybe if we go
Go
out to a
out, yeah.
restaurant or we're traveling on every day, on any even month, maybe we eat it once or twice at most,
Oh,
eat seafood. Yeah. Still tastes good though. We love sushi.
sushi.
I see some questions about comments about games here. We're gonna stick with some of the questions that people ask Megan in advance, and they kind of overlook a little bit here a little bit. Like someone asked, who's better at Wingspan? Chris asked, what's Megan's favorite board game to play with you? And we have some related topics here. Who wins more games is the question that someone asked you in advance.
My answer is I think we're pretty equal. I think we have different strengths in how we, play games. So I win some, he wins some. I'd say it's pretty equal.
Yeah.
Although I will say with Wingspan,
Yes, I think Megan is very good at Wingspan. Very good at Wingspan. I would say any game where you're planning ahead for a long-term strategy, I think Megan is generally has the edge with those. She's really good at looking ahead. I mean, that's what your job is. You're forecasting well into the future. I think that conveys really well into your board game acumen. I'm better, I think, a little bit at tactical thinking on my feet in a game. Yeah.
Decisiveness.
Yeah, decisive. Goes back to decisiveness. What is your favorite Stonemaier game?
And this is hard, so I'm gonna give two because I can't pick one. I love Tapestry. I like being able to choose the different tracks and changing it up every game, and then having the different sieves. But I also Viticulture was one of actually one of the first games that I was really into as a gamer, even before I met Jamie. So Viticulture is just kind of been one I've enjoyed for a very long time. And who doesn't like wine, so.
Yeah.
Oh, and then, oh yeah, and I also
Yeah.
want to say, yeah, even though Euphoria didn't make the top, I have always loved the theme. I don't know, it just cracks me up every time I look at the game box. I love the poor workers.
And just to point out, it may have looked like I was pointing Megan to a script. Megan wrote down her answers in advance. I have not prompted her to say those
Oh
things about
yeah.
our games. Kind of looked like that for a second.
Yeah, I again, this whole webcast is new to me, so I came prepared.
Yeah.
I'm not quite into the whole quick live cast situation yet.
Yeah. We're mostly answering questions that were asked in advance. There is one question that was just asked that I want to kind of maybe break a little bit of a stereotype here, because someone in the comments asked, how did Jamie get Megan into board gaming? And that's a big assumption there. I just want to open up the world a little bit. I didn't get Megan into board gaming at all. Megan's been playing board games. I don't know, when did you start playing board games?
Gosh, I mean, video games I was playing in high school.
Yeah.
Played Catan in high school, and then I think college is when I started to get into more, maybe the bigger board games and such. But yeah, I played a lot of
Yeah.
WoW. And then, yeah, after college, I probably switched more board games than video games, but. A lot of my friends are into games, and so I've always been into board games.
You
Even
mentioned
my parents as a child,
even
we
your
played
parents.
board
Yeah.
games, yeah.
Do you want to end with a WoW question? You mentioned WoW. Do you want to go
Oh,
to that now?
no.
We'll come back to WoW. Okay, lots of
Confused.
so I you just yesterday I filmed my video about my top 10 favorite comfort games, like games that just feel, when someone mentions them, I just feel immediately like a yes, I want to play that because it just feels comfortable. I don't know, something about that word. And so someone asked Megan that question, and Megan has a whole list here as well. It's not her top 10, it's just some games that are comfort games to her. So what are some comfort games
So they said singular game, but
for
I can never ever do a favorite one because I love so many games, and it always depends on like my mood and what I want to play in the moment. So here's a list.
Yeah.
Right off, Wingspan. We play that a lot.
Yeah.
Azul, mostly the Summer Pavilion, I think is the favorite of that one, but I love all the Azuls. Isle of Cats, Sagrada, Fantastic Factories, Fantasy Realms, Star Realms, and then Quacks of Queen. So yeah, that's my
That's a
list.
good comfort game list. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought about Star Realms for my list, but I gave Shards of Infinity the edge. Megan is
That's a good.
really good at Star Realms, though. All right, we have a few more questions that you all asked Megan a few weeks ago, and she's answering today. Okay, here's a question that actually ties in a little bit to the thing that I mentioned in the comments a second ago. Do strange gamers? Do strange gamers?
Was the question, yes.
Okay, I guess the question is,
Oh, I guess like
yeah.
versus gamers that are friends, like
Oh, do
stranger
strangers? Do
gamers.
gamers who don't know us as
Stranger
friends
danger.
ever doubt that Megan is a true gamer? I think various people, depending on your backgrounds, your groups, you may have been asked this: are you a true gamer when they first meet you, and how does that feel? This is a great question. Yeah.
And I know this is a problem with some of my friends, and as a woman, this is a really hard thing, but luckily I've been in good environments, so I've really never come across it, except for this one time I went to a magic draft gathering, and I got some really kind of pushback vibes from the people at that place. It's unfortunate that people kind of tie your sec your
Gender,
gender
yeah.
to gaming. So I think it's been getting better over the years, but yeah, I feel bad for other women who have to deal with that one, especially I think when you go to public things, it's worse, but I've had a really tight-knit group for a long time, so I haven't had to deal with that. So yeah, makes me feel bad. I don't understand the reason for that, but what I do is I just try to show those people through my actions when I play. So kind of a, I don't know, take that maybe. But yeah.
I had an experience with Kemet a while ago, where someone kind of treated someone like that. A female friend of mine joined a game of Kemet, and they kind of had this kind of off-putting behavior towards this friend who was probably more experienced in games than this guy was. And we just tore him up in this game of Kemet. And it was, I don't usually do that. I don't go after people in games. Kemet is a combative game, but it kind of felt good within the healthy construct of a game to do that to somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, so take that in not a physical way.
Exactly. Yeah. We have a few more questions, and I wanted to mention to Megan that the designer of the Isle of Cats popped up in the comments and said that he was really happy that you love the Isle of Cats. So, Frank, thanks for popping in. We're excited about the kittens expansion that's on Kickstarter now. All right, a couple more questions for Megan. And this is a question that someone actually echoed in the comments a minute ago. World of Warcraft, you played a lot of it. Were you Alliance or Horde?
I'm for the Horde. With friends and my brother, we have played. I've been Horde the entire time, so I'm hardcore Horde. My first character was actually a male Hunter Tauren. Interesting choice, but actually, back to the kind of previous conversation, I chose to play a male Tauren. Because I didn't want people knowing I was a female. And it was in a different sense though, because online it's a little different. I think people just got a little like they didn't take you seriously, and they always were like making kind of like sexual things about stuff. So I just played a male Tauren and went with that for a while. His name was Menemith after the Dragon Riders of Pern series. So I played him for many years, but then my second main, after a while, the Blood Elves came out, and I re-rolled as a female Blood Elf hunter. So her name was Kairi after Kingdom Hearts.
Kingdom Hearts, okay. I love the Menemith name whenever it comes up. I think that's your Lords of Waterdeep name too.
Yeah,
Trying to
I love
spell
it.
Menemith to someone. There's so many M's and N's in it.
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
so being Megan, I don't know. I think also the M
Yeah.
name drew me, even though it's a dude dragon, it's fine. I
Yeah.
just love the
Yeah. One final question here, and I might scroll through this to see if there's any other questions, but Megan does have to get back to work in a minute. Thank you so much for joining us today. The last question that a few people asked was, would you ever design a board game?
I love playing games. I don't think I would ever design a game. I'll leave that to Jamie. But I have been doing a secret project in a similar but unrelated area.
Yeah, we're keeping that
So.
intentionally vague, but it has been fun to see Megan apply her some talents that we haven't mentioned today. It's a talent because we don't want to give it away, but there's a certain thing that Megan is very good at that she has been working on something for. Yeah, I'm really excited about that. Yeah. There's a question. I guess you all have asked some wonderful questions here, some of which I think I should be able to answer, and I'll do that as I scroll back through the questions here. Thank you so much for joining us today, and especially thank you to Megan. I know this is a big leap, your first live cast. Thank you so much for giving this a try. It means a lot to me. One, I guess one random question at the end is, would Megan rather play a Stonemaier game or learn a new game?
Oh, I'm always up for learning games.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
yeah. I mean, over the last couple of years I have played probably more games than I ever have, but I love learning new games. Even though some of the Stonemaier games might be more of the comfort games, always up for a new one.
Yeah. I think someone else asked who usually reads the rules of a game, and that is me.
Oh yeah. I'll say I like
Yeah.
being taught
Yeah.
games, or if I've played a game, like I taught Wingspan to many people. So I don't mind teaching it if I already know it, but reading, yeah, rule books, that's not my thing.
I have noticed you're really good at that, though. Even if you only play a game once, you retain it so well. And I've seen you teach the same game like a few weeks later after only
Oh,
playing it
once,
once.
yeah.
Yeah, that's a great skill to have. Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for well, thank you. For, I'm gonna stick around for a little bit longer, obviously. But thank you for joining us. We love these questions. And if any of you ask questions that I can't answer, maybe I'll jot them down, and Megan can tell me the answers. Or maybe join us in the future if you all enjoyed this appearance. Not to put too much pressure on Megan. I appreciate you doing this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and I do play disc golf, but
Oh, yeah.
not well, so it's always teams when we play. My brother and his wife are very good at it, so the three of them will play, and I'll kind of just throw. I'm a good putter.
Very
I'll
good
putt.
putter.
All
Yeah.
right,
Yeah. All
it
right. Thanks, Megan. We'll see you in a
was good
bit.
to see everyone.
Megan and I both work from home here, so she's going to go back to her office just right over there. Yeah, that was really neat. That was fun. I didn't want to pressure Megan into doing this, but you all had mentioned the idea of her appearing to answer questions at some point, and I think she did a wonderful job. So thank you for those wonderful questions, and big thanks to Megan for doing that. And I saw that you all asked some questions along the way that I might be able to help out with. Let's see some of these questions. And I have a few topics that I can cover today as well. Looks like Jonathan has some great documentary recommendations about. We were talking about vegetarianism. Jonathan mentions King of Corn and Kiss the Ground and Biggest Little Farm. That's great. And Jonathan, I think you make a great point here that part of our vegetarianism is focused on the environment, but not eating meat doesn't always necessarily compute. Actually, no, eating meat does not always necessarily compute to hurting the environment. There are ways that we can eat meat and still eat the types of meat that are actually not bad for the environment, I guess. So I appreciate you bringing that up. What are some other questions here? Nazi asked, do you ever take some two-player games when you travel? If so, which ones? And we're still, I would say, figuring out which games are best for this because the travel size is good. I have a top 10 travel game list where I thought about a lot about this. I know when we went to New Zealand a few weeks ago, we brought, or a few years ago, not weeks ago, I wish a few weeks ago, we brought Star Realms, and that worked out really well to travel with. There was a ferry that we took from the North Island to the South Island. We played Star Realms on the ferry. You just need a tabletop to play Star Realms. What else do we play? We played Love Letter, but not two player. I'm not sure. Love Letter might work well two player, but I haven't tried that. And yeah, I'd have to go back and look at my list of travel games to remember the other ones on there. Miles asked, we mentioned that we love the cup, a cupcakery here in St. Louis. Miles asked if I've been to Sweet Art. I have, but not for a while, Miles. It's been a little while. Miles says they have a fake chicken sandwich that looks really good. Oh, interesting. I didn't know they served non-cupcake meals, so I'll have to try their fake chicken sandwich. Samuel asked a question for Megan, but I maybe would be able to answer it here. Samuel asked, since Megan is more attentive to detail, have you or would you ever consider helping Jamie with a game design? And I agree, like attention to detail, I think a lot about it, but it's just not my forte. I try really, really hard to make games as balanced and as intuitive and look at games from different player perspectives, things like that. But Megan, I would say precision is another word for it, and Megan's really, really good at that. Megan does every now and then play test a game with me, but it's also not her job. It's my job to do that, and we also pay play testers to play test. So she does it on occasion, and she has great feedback whenever she does. But I wouldn't say it's something that Megan would. I mean, she's always. I'm always open to feedback that she wants to give me about games, but I would never expect her to do that for a Stonemaier game. Anderson has a question that might be, yeah, I think this is completely unrelated to Megan. He says, since the release of Red Rising and seeing that you're already entering the Dune world, mostly through my love of the game Dune Imperium, that got me to read the book, that got me to buy this shirt. He says, okay, you're already entering the world of Dune, and also because a lot of games from Stormar Games are based on fantasy and fictional world, speculative elements. What other sci-fi or fantasy universes do you both like, and what is the one that you would want to see in a board game? And really, Red Rising is the one. I might explore Red Rising again in the future if I have the ability to do so. Otherwise, I think I'll be creating new worlds, not visiting worlds that already exist in some other form of IP. Yeah. Let's see if we have any other questions here that Megan didn't already answer. Justin says, he says, I was speaking to a cousin in Turkey, and he was saying how he wants to play board games, but they're far too expensive in Turkey. How would the gaming industry be able to address this problem? I think the key is really working with localization partners around the world. And typically, when we work with a localization partner, they translate the files, they create the printer-ready files, and then we handle, in conjunction with Panda, our manufacturer, we handle the production side of it. And that works well, I think, for most instances. There are a few instances where it is just far too expensive, whether it's due to import fees or just due to the cost of games, like you mentioned in Turkey here, that we will let the one of our games be published and produced, not just published, but produced locally. And so I think that might be the solution. You would need to use a local manufacturer, and we've done that in a few select instances where it has been right. And sometimes it means that some of the parts are manufactured locally, and some of the more complex components, like the miniatures, for example, are still produced in China and then shipped to the local partner. Yeah. Ahmed says, have I ever tried falafel? Yeah, I love falafel. In fact, we just had a play test last Wednesday as a company, and we went to a local place called Medina and got falafel from there. I love falafel. And they have a great falafel sandwich. I also made Rice Krispie treats for my crew there when we played that play test, which was fun. Unrelated to falafel, but it was fun to cook for my coworkers. Joe says, how does it feel playing a game you designed and or losing it? It really depends on the situation. If I'm teaching a game to someone for the first time, a game that I designed for the first time, I really want them to have fun with it. So I do everything I can to try to help them learn it and help them have a good time with it. I know it might not end up being a game for them, but at least that one experience, that one time that they have, that first time, I'm really trying to help them have fun with it. And that actually, that pressure to help them have fun, is sometimes a lot. Like it's almost like this inner tension, this inner stress that I feel to help someone else have a good time with the game. And as I'm watching them and seeing them either have a good time or not have a good time, that's stressful as well. That's how it feels. The other circumstance is if I'm playing a game with someone who already knows it. So if I'm playing Viticulture with Megan, Megan already knows Viticulture inside and out. She's very good at it. And we can just sit down and play it. And I can play against someone like Megan or someone who's very experienced in the game and just have a normal competition where I'm not really as worried about the fun that everyone else is having. I'm more focused on my strategy and what I'm doing, and also still aware of their fun. But I really enjoy, I prefer that experience when that can happen. You also asked, how does it feel to lose a game? I'm not typically in games I'm not focused on the losing or the winning. It does feel good to win. But it's more about like, did I execute the thing that I wanted to do in this game? Did I feel clever? Did I build upon something? Did I have a sense of progression? Did I have fun? Did I not get in the way of the others having fun in the game? That sort of thing. Losing is not really a factor in my enjoyment for a game. Rich points out that if you do eat animals, it will always hurt the animal, even if it doesn't hurt the greater environment. That is a fantastic point, Richard. That is a great point. That's one of the reasons why I stopped eating meat. Skylar has a question for Megan. Let's see if I can answer it. If Jamie were to design a game with you in mind, what theme and mechanisms would you want to include in it? I'll write that one down because I don't think I can answer that off the top of my head. So I will write that one down. What like a theme and favorite mechanism would Megan like to see in the game? Megan really does like such a wide variety of games that might be a tough one for her to answer, But we'll see. Was it? Oh yeah. Megan pointed something out. She does love, like in Lord of the Rings, she really, and you may have even got this from her answer about World of Warcraft. She loves archers and rangers, like the theme of bows and arrows in games. She likes seeing that, in games. So that's like, if there's a character that, if there's an elf character often, or a character that has a bow and arrow, she's often drawn to that. Chris mentions Hive as his go-to travel game. That is a great travel game. That's also a great outside game because Hive can't blow away in the wind if you, if you're playing it, because it has these heavy bakelite tiles. Tom asked if there's any news about Tapestry for the full AI version or the Board Game Arena version. And their Board Game Arena got back to me, and they said that the version that they thought had a long way to go actually does not have that long to go. And so they think it could be in alpha as soon as in sometime in July. Also related to that, Viticulture is now in beta on Board Game Arena. And we celebrated Viticulture's 8th anniversary last week. And there was some fun stuff there. In fact, if you go to the Viticulture Facebook group, you can see that I spoiled a very small thing about the expansion there. But you have to go to the Viticulture group to find out what I spoiled, because it's an image, it's something you have to see. That's about the Viticulture expansion. And as for Tapestry, the full AI version of Tapestry, I think, Tim, I don't know if you're here, Tim, you sent me an email about it last week. I think that Tim said the early alpha version should be ready in the fall. So in around 3 months, 3 or 4 months, we should start seeing the full AI version of Tapestry and an alpha version of it in the fall. Briss says, "Do I have a strong opinion about tin boxes for games?" Not a strong opinion, but I think I generally prefer cardboard boxes. Yeah, I think I only have one tin on my shelf, and that is Sushi Go. Yeah, Sushi Go Party. And I think the rest of my games are in cardboard boxes. Yeah. Not that that is indicative of anything, but I think I prefer cardboard boxes. Justin mentions Jaipur and Railroad Inc. as his favorite travel games. I can definitely see that. Tim has a, so one of the topics I covered recently, Chris mentioned this, and Tim mentioned this about libraries. So I had a blog post recently about, basically, I mean, the premise is I used to volunteer in a library when I was a kid. And I learned from that experience that libraries have budgets for things. Like, they don't get those books for free. The books that you find in the library were not given to them. Libraries have a budget. They bought those books from the publishers, which really makes sense when you think about it, because why would publishers print a bunch of books and give them all away for free? The business of a publisher is to invest in a book and sell it, whether they're selling it to a consumer or selling it to a retailer or selling it to an organization like a library. And so I was wondering, in more recent years, I've gotten requests from librarians asking me to donate games to them, which is something I'm open to given the circumstances of the library. But I also know that libraries have, or at least back in the day, they had budgets for those things. Why would libraries pay for books, but not pay for games? And the reason is pretty nuanced. Like, the answer is, the short answer is, libraries do actually have a budget for things, but whether or not they spend that budget on games is often up to some level of bureaucracy, a board, and sometimes that budget is very small. And so sometimes libraries have to kind of jumpstart that library to prove, have a proof of concept, show people that having board games in a library is actually worth the investment, worth the budget, and things like that. There are other reasons. This is a big topic. I have a blog post about it. Check it out. I posted that on Monday if you're interested in that topic. And Tim actually, okay, so Tim says here, "I went to the main library in my city to check on their board game situation and let them know about the Stillmire Library support program." And that's wonderful, Tim. In fact, that is a wonderful way. If you want to see, if you use your public library, your local public library, and you want games there, tell the library you want them. Take the guesswork out of it and tell them you would like to see games in the library, and you can even recommend a few games. You can even say, "I would love it if you carried Wingspan or Pendulum or Charterstone in your library." Actually, Charterstone legacy game probably wouldn't work in a library, but those other games would. Tim says they said they put all their puzzles up and mainly get donations. I'm hoping to start a game night going there when they allow more events. Told them libraries have a budget for media that I'll help whenever I can. And that's great of you to offer that, Tim. Tim himself is an author, so I appreciate Tim. And who creates media, doing that for another form of media. And yeah, I think I see it, I see the most sustainable solution for this being that libraries have an opportunity to purchase games from distributors or directly from publishers at a steep discount, similar to the discount that distributors get, so that game publishers get funds for the games that they've created, and libraries then have a budget that they can use to spend on games that are appreciated by their patrons. That's the long-term solution I see for it. Nazi says, imagine that you and Megan have to go somewhere in the world where you can only take three games with you to play for the rest of your lives. Which games would those be? No new games allowed ever. That's such a tough hypothetical, kind of the deserted island question. I have answered this at some point in this past, but I don't. And but I actually have not answered it with the idea that Megan would be on the deserted island with me, which would be wonderful. That would be a wonderful way to spend a long time. I'm trying to think of what games that Megan and I pull out quite a bit that we would replay over and over again. She mentioned some great comfort games before. She mentioned Isle of Skye. She mentioned Wingspan, Azul, Sagrada. She's Fantastic Factories. Oh man, it's a really hard question to answer. One that I would say Isle of Skye and Wingspan come to mind just off the top of my head because they do have such immense replayability based on the randomness of the cards. The variability of the cards in Isle of Skye and in Wingspan really, really helps with replayability. So that would be on our minds. I don't know if those necessarily would be the games that we'd pick, but I think that would be definitely on our minds while selecting those games. Yeah. Fun question, just a tough one to answer on the spot. Chuck says, are there any plans to reprint all Scythe promos from the past? And Chuck, we actually do reprint Scythe promos on an ongoing basis. That's our kind of our philosophy at Stonemaier Games. We don't make something and then say, we're never making that again. That's only for you who ordered it on the first day and you never have to get it again. So Scythe promos have been in stock and, well, not necessarily in stock, but in print since the first day we made them. So the easiest way to find them is from MeepleSource. MeepleSource is really good at selling and shipping lots of tiny little things, and so we have partnered with MeepleSource for a long time, and that is the easiest way to get all the Scythe promos. So feel free to check out MeepleSource. If they don't have something in stock, it doesn't mean that it's out of print. In fact, it definitely does not mean that. It just means that we are reprinting it, and it'll be back in stock later this year. Yeah. Patrick says, how are you guys doing with the heat? I see it's supposed to break 100 degrees in St. Louis. Yeah, it's very hot here. It's been interesting to see too, because our local electric company has sent us some notifications saying, like, over the next hour, blast your air conditioning because we are going to turn it off for a few hours. They somehow have that amount of control over our thermostat, which is interesting, different. I haven't seen that in the past. And it was a suggestion. Okay, so we could override. Megan's telling me that we could override it if we want, but I think we've stuck with it because I don't want to cause a blackout. I don't want to be part of a electric grid blackout if we can avoid that. And our walls are pretty insulated. I'm sure there's some people out there who really, really struggle in the heat. And if our AC knocked out, I mean, it would be rough. We've had our AC go out twice since we moved to this place, and it's rough. But I think some people have it even harder. So, Patrick, we're doing okay. I appreciate you asking. We have been very careful about when we go outside, really. And even like we went outside for a wonderful walk in the botanical gardens on Saturday in the morning, and it got really, really hot. And I don't know if it was sunstroke or heat stroke or just my weird body interacting with the heat, but I got really sick for the rest of the day, for a good portion of the day. I wasn't dehydrated. I just got some sort of sunstroke, sunsick, heat stroke. I don't know what it was. So I'm trying to be careful about that. Yeah. Let's see. Nathan says, Nathan's reading Red Rising and it's gotten him interested in the game. I love hearing that, Nathan. Thanks for checking out the books. Jonathan has a question about the shipping costs. And actually, I should mention this because Megan was here for the first part of the video. I didn't necessarily see or answer all the questions early on. So if I missed your question early on and it's something I can answer, I'm not ignoring it. Just feel free to ask it again. I'm happy to answer it here. Jonathan says he saw Quackalope, the YouTube channel Quackalope, Jesse over there, about how shipping costs are going to become very costly. They already are costly. Freight shipping is really, really expensive right now. Jonathan says it's getting to the point where Kickstarter game designers are possibly requiring additional costs from backers, even though pledge managers have been closed. Can you speak to this? I mean, yeah, well, Jesse is right that, freight shipping costs have gone way up. And however, with Kickstarter in particular, so I see a couple of different circumstances here. One is that you should always have a buffer in your Kickstarter campaign. If your game costs, if you charge backers $50 for the game and say another $15 for shipping, there's so much of a buffer built in there. I mean, the cost of making that game is probably around $12 to $15, maybe at a stretch $20. That's a $30 profit margin right there. They can use that profit margin to pay for the shipping, the extra shipping cost, easily. And even that aside, if when you were estimating shipping costs, you should have already built in a buffer. That said, the current freight shipping situation is that freight shipping costs are like 5 or 6 times more expensive than they once were. So that means for a copy of a game that previously cost $3 to freight ship, this isn't shipping from like a fulfillment center to you. This is the freight shipment when the game is on the boat. So costs per game are actually not all that high. But again, that previously cost maybe $3 to freight ship now might cost $15. That's a big jump. That's a big jump. So that's a $12 increase. In circumstances where you cut out a ton of your profit margin up front, if you had a game that cost $20 to make and you charge $29 for Kickstarter, and that $9 is really there for art and graphic design that you have also paid for, and you somehow maybe built shipping into those costs, and you really truly need backers to pay that extra, or you are going to go bankrupt, I think that is a circumstance to do it. But in most circumstances on Kickstarter, the profit margins are incredible. Like, they're really, really good if you're charging. And even for these heavy miniature games where you're paying $150 for a game with you know, 70 giant miniatures, even those games probably only cost around $30, at most maybe even $40 for the most expensive game. And that is truly a stretch. So the profit margin is there. They can, most creators, I think, can cover it. And if they don't, ask them to break down those costs. If they're asking you to charge more, ask them to break down the cost of manufacturing the game versus the cost that they charged you. Yeah, I think you deserve to see that as a backer. Richard says, Seth Godin has a practice to write one post a day and Seinfeld writes one joke a day. Do you have any practices as a designer or entrepreneur that you do at work every day? I do create a lot of different forms of media. I would say the only form of media that I do every day is an Instagram post. I do one Instagram post every morning. Otherwise, I do between 3 or 4 personal blog posts a week, 2 Stillmar Games business-related blog posts a week. I post 3 YouTube videos a week, but really my filming is well in advance, so it really depends on the week. I think I've covered all the social media. Yeah, I do one e-newsletter a month. Actually, I do an ambassador. I do a couple different e-newsletters every month. So I do have these habitual practices, but it's the only once a day thing is an Instagram post. Rick says, other than the manufacturing cost, shipping to the fulfillment center and the fulfillment holding cost, what other expenses should be considered when calculating the base goal of a Kickstarter campaign? That is a really important question, Rick, and I don't know if I can accurately cover it here. I would recommend going to my blog post about the funding goal. Look for the funding goal. It's one of my earliest blog posts, and it goes over some of those core costs that you need to consider. You've hit upon some of the crucial ones here: manufacturing cost, freight shipping, and fulfillment. Those are the big three that you can predict fairly accurately in advance. You also have to account for sunk costs like art and graphic design, and also if you're using Kickstarter, account for the 10% fee that you're going to lose off the top. Zach says, with people celebrating the 8th anniversary of Viticulture, I saw that someone had Viticulture drink coasters. Are those available somewhere? Those are, yeah, I guess this goes counter to something I just said, which is that pretty much everything that we create, we still continue to create. But Viticulture drink coasters were something that we included in the original Kickstarter campaign, and we haven't made sense because they're coasters. I mean, they're not an integral gameplay component. And so we've hardly ever, I think this might be the first time someone's requested it in years, Zach. So they're not available, but if you post in the Viticulture Facebook group, if they're really important to you, I bet someone there might be willing to sell them to you, or if you just pay for shipping, they might be willing to just ship them to you. What we do make on a fairly ongoing basis are viticulture wine glasses, stemless wine glasses with the word viticulture etched in them. And I'm really happy with the company that makes them. We've been making them for a couple of years now. I believe they're out of stock right now, but I plan on making a new print run in time for the holiday shipping season. Yeah. Michael says, I'd love to see your game shelf stored sometime. Well, based on the camera angle earlier in this video, you did see my Calyx shelf, which is a 4x4 shelf of some of the games in my collection. I also have two smaller shelves, one my shelf of opportunity games that I haven't played yet, and one my game of kind of filler social games. And then I have my Stonemaier games collection on a different shelf. But I post shelfies every now and then on Instagram. Maybe I need to do one in the near future because I haven't done a shelfie in a while. So I'll keep that in mind. Pay attention to the at Jamie Stegmeier Instagram. That's where I post everything related to Stonemaier games and everything that I'm playing and everything game related and cat related and food related. Matthew has a really nice comment here. I'll read this, Matthew. It's a very nice compliment, so I'm going to read this. Matthew says, one thing that always comes over so strongly is your sense of kindness and compassion and your desire to be welcoming to anyone, no matter their background. These qualities seem to be very important to you. And yes, absolutely, they are. And I would stress that this is something that I try to do. I try to be this person. I try to be compassionate and kind. I don't always achieve that. And I try to learn from those times when I don't do that. But it is always my goal to be welcoming and inclusive, to bring joy to others. Yeah, absolutely. Matthew goes on to say, I wonder if you are influenced by anyone or any specific thing in this regard. The world always needs more good souls, those people that bring light and joy into our lives. Bless you and thank you. And he has some recommendations of Marcus Aurelius, Krishnamurti, and Rupert Spira. I think I've heard of the first two. I'm not familiar with Rupert Spira. Matthew, that's a good question. I think I learned a lot from my parents in this regard. I definitely need to give my mom and dad credit for the way that they treat people and the way that they've treated people over the years. That has definitely rubbed off on me. And a lot, I don't know if it goes to a specific teaching or a specific person beyond that. It's often me looking at how people treat each other and the way that I'd like to be treated. I was just talking about this with someone the other day about Twitter and Twitter, how Twitter can be a force for good and a force for something that I don't quite understand, which is someone posted on Twitter. Like, have you ever seen a friend, maybe someone on social media say post about how someone blocked them or and that to me, I know that's frustrating. Like if you want to connect with someone and they've blocked you, I know that can be frustrating. But the idea of posting about that, I don't quite understand it. Like what are you saying to the world about yourself when you are when you're using your platform to talk about how someone has said that they don't want to interact with you anymore? Like A, there's probably a reason they don't want to interact with you anymore. And B, you just used your social currency to do that. I don't know, it's a little off topic there, but it brought it to mind a little bit that it's just kind of a little baffling behavior to me. Like, why not just not say anything? And the same honestly goes for when people use social media to post about things that they hate. I think it's great that people have different opinions. I think you're welcome to voice your opinion. But I'd much rather spend my time and energy focusing on the things that I love. Like, if I read a book that I didn't really enjoy, I don't post a blog post about how much I didn't enjoy it. I post a blog post about the next book that I read that I really did enjoy. And on my game design YouTube channel, there are plenty of games that I play that I probably won't play again. There are even games that I just absolutely don't enjoy. But I try to find that thing in every game that I think is worth learning from and that I think is actually pretty clever. Because I think every game has some element that's at least a little bit clever. And I use my social media currency to post about that element of the games. That's why my YouTube channel focuses on my favorite mechanisms in board games, even games that I won't play again because I didn't really enjoy them all that much. Frank is here, a designer who I've generally had only positive things to say about his games, so I really do love them. Frank says, on a digital note, have I tried Sovranti? He says they're a reasonably new digital platform and I've had great experiences with them. Highly recommend checking out their approach. Sovranti. 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 I have not even heard of that, Frank, but I appreciate the recommendation and I will definitely check that out after this live cast. Chris says, Chris is on the board of directors at a library, and he says, if you want to see board games in your library and you don't, I highly recommend that people reach out, even email the Board of Trustees. I think Chris is echoing what I said earlier about actually telling the library, tell your local library that you want to see a certain game on their shelf. You can, this, I think the same thing goes for game stores. If you go to a game store and you don't see a game that you want on their shelf, it's not your responsibility to say anything. But if you want to make a positive difference, if you want to actually be a power for change, tell the owner of the store, hey, I love this game. I'd love to see you make it. And every now and then, if it's a Stonemaier game, every now and then it is possible you hear the owner say, oh, I just can't get a copy. I've been trying to get a copy. I can't get one. Tell them that I will talk to them. I am happy to talk to any game store owner. Our director of sales, Alex, is happy to talk to any game store owner and connect them with our games. We want to get our games in stores. And so if a retailer has had trouble getting one of our games from a distributor, we are definitely here to help. And you are welcome to connect them to me, and I'm happy to help them. Yeah. Or Alex. I'll probably put Alex on it because that is his job. It's good for him to have those relationships with retailers, but I am also happy to make those calls and have those chats. Edgar has a question about, okay, here we go. I'll just read it. Edgar says, how do you feel about games with sudden endings, like in Istanbul, compared to games that let you finish the round and even add one or two more rounds after that? I prefer the latter as it makes for games with more strategies. I feel like games that come to a sudden standstill are fun, but that endgame part feels flat. I have a little bit of experience with both. In Scythe, for example, Scythe, the game comes to a sudden stop. And I think in most cases, that is the right thing for Scythe, because if you end Scythe with a climactic battle and then suddenly everyone else gets one more turn, that battle might mean a lot less because suddenly all this land that you've conquered in one big important move for you means a lot less because the other players had a chance to take a final turn. So I think in Scythe that's generally a good thing. We did tweak this a little bit, or give players the opportunity to tweak this a little bit, in the resolutions module in the Wind Gambit, which offer a bunch of other different endgame conditions and things that can happen at the end of the game. One of which, I believe, if I remember correctly, is the game, if you trigger the endgame, all other players get to take one more turn, but they can't use it to move. And so that was to prevent players from then completely upending the final big move that you made to end the game in terms of what you were taking over some territories. But Edgar, so I think that is a little bit of an outlier. So if it's area control, if there's a little bit of combat involved in the game, I think having a game end with a decisive moment, I think, can be important. But in most other games, I think it's pretty important for players to take either an even number of turns or let players take another round or two of turns. We do that in most of our other games as well. Yeah. Thank you, Carol, for popping by as usual. Allie says, does Isle of Skye work well for just two players? And yes, it does. It does work really, really, really well for two players. That is one of the comfort games that Megan and I share, and we have had a blast playing it two players, just as we have fun playing it with three or four players as well. Let's see. Just scrolling down to see if there are any last few questions before I close out for the day. Oh, no, I have a few topics that I didn't even cover today, so let me mention those real quick. Games that I played recently are Ra, Nine Tiles Panic, which was new to me. That was a fun game. We've been working our way through the Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion tutorial. So we just finished game three yesterday. Played Magic Maze, and I finished my campaign for The King's Dilemma, and I had a really, really great experience with that legacy game. I will say that it also had one of the best, most satisfying finales to a legacy game or a campaign game that I've ever played. I think the finale is really tough to pull off, really, really important. And the finale of The King's Dilemma is done really, really well, in my opinion. I really enjoyed it. We played a five-player game, took 15 games, I believe five sessions, and I really, really enjoyed that game. In addition to my post on Monday about libraries, last Thursday I posted about Doodle Meeple. So if you are someone in the game industry and you want people to know that you're in the game industry, add your information to Doodle Meeple, whether you're a proofreader, a designer, a publisher, if you want to be any of these things, if you want to be an artist or if you are an artist, Doodle Meeple is a great place to showcase your talents and let people find you, help people find you. And I did a video this past weekend about skill tests. So my top 10 favorite games that use skill tests and what those skill tests are. I haven't done chocolate today. What is my chocolate of the day? I had these little coconut clusters. Did I do that last week? That might be from last week. But I do have these really delicious coconut clusters, one side of which has chocolate on them from Trader Joe's that I'm enjoying right now. So Stonemaier Games related, most of the stuff that's been going on for me, like obviously some business stuff that that just happens every day. Do a lot of answer a lot of emails, things like that. But did have a great playtest last week, and I've been working on three different game designs at this point. Working on three different game designs. That's been fun as well. I'll end with a few questions here. Tony says while our group really enjoyed it in the past, I haven't been able to put my bring myself to put the game Pathogenesis in our gaming rotation yet, since the pandemic seems a little too soon. Do you have any games that you've avoided now or in the past because the theme was too sensitive to current events? I don't know if I have. The one game that I think Megan and I were a little hesitant to bring to the table was Fog of Love, because we've heard I had played Fog of Love not with romantic partners, and I had heard that it can create conflict within romantic partners somehow. But we've played it twice and we really enjoyed it and had a good time. I think we learned a little about each other in playing the game, and we were able to put ourselves in the characters of the game instead of playing as Jamie and Megan, and that helped quite a bit. That's the closest thing I can think of that of a game that maybe I was hesitant to put to the table because of the theme and maybe where we were in our relationship at that point. Tim has 23 pounds of the game Nemesis landing at his door tomorrow. That is a game that's on my list that I really want to play. It's on my Geekway to the West want to play games list that I'll have to post later this year. In fact, I'll have to make a reminder about that. Geekway want to play. Geekways in October this year, so I'll have to post about that in late September. Tim has to reevaluate some of the space in his collection to make room for this new Nemesis game. Samuel says, "Would you ever consider a Stonemaier Games community Discord? You've seen a few other publishers open their own recently." We've considered it, but I think we're going to stick with our Facebook groups. Have a game-specific Facebook group for each of our games, and we have a group for Stonemaier Ambassadors as well. But I think we might be at the peak of how much social media we can manage, and Discord would just add another layer to that I wouldn't be able to pay as much attention to as I'd like. So I think we'll stick with our Facebook groups in those regards. Chris, so I was talking a second ago about the idea of someone posting, going out of their way on social media to post about something they hate or that someone blocked them, like. Such a weird thing to post. And Chris says, "That's how I feel about when someone asks for a game recommendation based on a game they like, and someone chooses to say that game is awful." So if I say, I love the game Downforce. What other game like Downforce would you recommend? And someone else chimes into that conversation and says, "Oh, Downforce sucks." You just don't need to say that. That's not answering the question. That's not contributing to the conversation. Chris, I think Rodney at Watch It Played had a great little mini rant about this a while ago, and I completely agree with that. And I think Rodney pointed out there's a place to talk about whether or not you like a game, and that place is in a game review when you want to review a game. People are showing up at the review to see what you think about that game. But jumping into a conversation where people are talking about something they like and other things that they want to spin off that thing that they like. It's just not the place to do that, in my opinion. Michael says he has a similar perspective on social media and how I treat people. Coralie says, "I just want to thank you for adding Viticulture to Board Game Arena." And Coralie, I'll read the whole comment. I don't want to skip through this. She says, "I bought the game in Tuscany before the pandemic, and it's been waiting on her shelf, but I just saw it on Board Game Arena. I'm excited to be able to learn it online. Also, I think having the rules lawyering and text helps." Will be so useful for teaching the game to my group. And I totally agree. I love that about Board Game Arena, that you can hover over something and it tells you what that card means. It tells you what this action does. Super helpful for learning the game. She says, "Do I have plans to add all Stonemaier games to Board Game Arena?" I have found over the pandemic year that I really do love Board Game Arena. I am open to all of our games being there. However, some of our games are, or actually, any game that has a digital version of our games is the rights. Depend on the company that publishes the game, the digital rights holder. So some of them have said, yes, it's fine for you to put your games on Board Game Arena, even though we have the digital rights to the game. Others have said no, and I respect that. So for those who have said yes, you will see our games there. The other factor is, can Board Game Arena find a developer to put it on Board Game Arena? So whether or not I authorize it, they still need a developer to program in it. So right now, I have definitely authorized them to put Red Rising and Rolling Realms on Board Game Arena, but I don't think they found developers for them yet. But I hope they do. Jonathan says, have I ever tried playing Warhammer 40K? I have not, no. John says, do I ever get gaming fatigue? And if so, what do you do to refresh yourself for more gaming? It doesn't happen often. I try to be aware of it just in case it does happen, John. Like sometimes at game nights, I'm just not in the mood for like a long, heavy game, but I might be in the mood for a shorter game, is generally that. And the other thing that I experience sometimes is sometimes I'm just really in the mood to design games. That is a big part of my life. I do work on design a lot, but sometimes I'm just more excited to design than play games. And I have to give myself permission to do that. I guess your question is more generally, what do you do to refresh yourself for more gaming? If I really do feel like I'm not in the mood to play games, and I try to, and I realize I have to step away for a few days, I do something else. I don't know. I have other hobbies that I do as well, and I just don't force it. I don't think there's a need to force a hobby if I'm not excited about it. Tim says, does Geekway to the West have a library of games, or do we bring our own? It's a mix of the two. People often bring, if there's a game that you really want to play with people, you can bring it to Geekway and play it. Definitely, people definitely do that. I would recommend doing that, even if you keep it in the trunk of your car and only bring it out when people are ready to play it. But Geekway does have an extensive library. If you go to Geekway's website, you can see which games are in their library, and they will also post their play and win library, which is a separate library of games that you can check out and potentially win if you play them. It's a wonderful system. They will post lists of both of those types of games in the future. In fact, I need to make sure that they have any games that they want from us. Play and win for Geekway. Allison from Kidsplaining has a similar echo to what I was saying about negativity on social media. She says she totally agrees to keep the negative comments about games you don't like to yourself. Our boys, Allison's channel features both Allison and Daniel, her husband, but also their two boys. Our boys have been really careful with that because they are designing games and realize that another person spent so much time, sweat, and tears developing that game, whether you like it or not. And yeah, I try to be, I love that you said that because I try to be aware of that even when I'm critical about, say, a movie. A lot of people worked really hard to bring that movie to life. Like it wasn't just a handful of actors and a director, it was probably hundreds of people who worked really hard to bring that movie to life. It's okay if I don't like it, but it also doesn't really feel good for me to spend an entire post just bashing on something that a lot of people worked really hard to bring to life. Yeah. Heather says, she mentions some other people with Stegmeier as a last name here. Yeah, they might be distantly related, Heather. All right. I think we're just a little bit past 11 o'clock today. Thank you again so much for joining me today and joining and Megan. I think she can hear me off to the side. Thank you so much for Megan joining me today. I will throw this video up on YouTube, and if you have any further questions or comments or thoughts, feel free to post them in YouTube. That's where I will definitely see the comments in the future. Nizzy has one last quick question. Will there be a digital version of Tapestry? Yes, it'll be on Board Game Arena and just a full AI digital version on Steam and iOS and Android, all different digital platforms. That will happen as well. That's in the works, been in the works for a while. All right, thank you all for joining me today and have a great day. I will see you next Wednesday. Take care.